How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. I, of course, am your host, Dan Wilson, recent Temple Media School graduate and lifelong Philadelphia Phillies fan, Dan Wilson, that is. And on today's episode, part two of my conversation with Phillies beat writer Matt Breen from the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you haven't already checked out part one, I obviously encourage you to do so. But here in part two, we got more into the discussion of the Phillies' timeline to actually contend for the postseason. How many wins is realistic this year? And again, what baseball is going to look like in 2021, at least from his personal perspective and across the league? And what rules might we see or in terms of changing strategy or just the overall product of baseball as we enter yet another COVID-affected season. So again, if you haven't already listened to part one, I encourage you to do so. But here's part two of my conversation with Matt Breen.
I was going to actually further ask about two factors at play here that you mentioned, that whether they should or shouldn't really be in the equation. I believe they are. Number one is, let's say the Phillies had a solidified center fielder. Let's say they went out, got Jackie Bradley Jr., even a George Springer this winter. Let's say they had a center fielder. You know, it's the days of, 2008 and Shane Victorino's playing center field and Odubel Herrera isn't really competing for a job. Would he be in minicamp right now? Would he be in the minors? Is it even an option? I was going to follow up because basically, as I saw it, it's the two options they have are have him in the majors, have him in the minors. They have to pay him. Do they even have the option to basically just, like, if the Phillies wanted to take a strong moral position, could they pay him to stay home? Would Odubel have a case there? And also in terms of fans, we don't know how many fans they announced. I believe it's a couple thousand fans in Clearwater. We don't know what the fan situation in Philadelphia is going to be. Are the Phillies thinking about the reaction as Dan Baker announces Odubel Herrera's name in front of live people this spring?
They're definitely this spring. It's tough to gauge the Philly reaction, the sports radio reaction, the social media reaction, all of those things matter. Like, this is a business, and you've seen John Middleton run this team as a business the last few off seasons with signing Bryce Harper, firing Gabe Kapler, firing Matt Klentak. Like, all of those decisions are performance related, but they're also business decisions where he wanted the team to become popular, and he didn't want the team to become unpopular because of, a manager or a GM. And I think that is definitely in play here, but he's in minicamp, and they are, I think the belief is that they understand there's going to be backlash. Like, there has been in other places where suspended players have come back to the team, but they're willing to maybe eat that backlash for X amount of weeks until it dies down, because if they believe that he can help them on the baseball team. And if they had George Springer, they had Jackie Bradley Jr., yeah, that would be a baseball reason. I think you could fight that one, that you could say, here's your baseball reason. We just paid X amount of millions of dollars for this guy to play center field. So, and we don't have a spot in AAA because we have, Mickey Moniak is going to play there every day, or now Adam Haseley, because we signed this guy. So we don't have a spot for you in AAA, and we're going to let you go. But the Phillies would still be on the hook for that $13 million. But Odubel would be a free agent. But that didn't happen. So now we're here. He's going to play for the Phillies next month in Clearwater. And I just think it's a matter of time until he comes to Philadelphia.
So the bottom line basically here is they're on the hook for the money regardless. They could cut bait with them, but they would need a baseball reason to do so. And if they don't have a legitimate baseball reason, they can expect to hear from the Players Association and Odubel's camp about that, basically to fight it, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Exactly. Because they have a grievance, they would, I guess they would go to court. It's a collective bargaining agreement with a union. And if you break that union, you're going to have a grievance filed. So their hands are tied, but not really. Like I said, he could have went to minor league spring training. But I think they're showing their cards that they believe he has some baseball ability, or at least they want to find out if he still has the baseball ability, and they're going to give him a shot.
Kind of around the edges of this roster, they signed Brad Miller. It seemed like a good move, an obvious move to bring him back. He was obviously well-liked 2 years ago. The guy can hit, was batting cleanup at times for the Cardinals last year. How many games can you realistically get out of a guy like Andrew McCutchen in left field? Is there any reason for concern with JT Realmuto, if he's not opening day, is that another roster spot? Well, obviously it's another roster spot for someone else. Who could that go to? Would that be like a Jeff Mathis or Rafael Marchand situation? And how many roster spots in general are kind of up for grabs here over the next month or so?
There's probably just total roster spots. There's like not starting positions. Maybe there's a bench job to be won, really, when you look at it, and a couple spot, maybe two spots in the bullpen, depending on who you consider locks. And you know, when I look at that, I think it's easy to determine who maybe six of those eight locks are. So there's really not a ton of drama of roster battles going on in camp right now. It's more just like filling out who's going to be the fourth and fifth starter, who's going to be in center field, and who's, if you're really into the bench job, who's going to be the last guy on the bench, if there even is one. So Brad Miller, like you said, I thought was a good signing. Gives you coverage in the corners, especially left field, which he can play there. Andrew McCutchen, as of now, is not going to be able to be used as a DH. He did not look like last year a guy that was fit to play every game, which is realistic. He had tore his ACL a year earlier. Had a long rehab process. It was kind of amazing that, you know, he was able to come back so quick. So they were able to use him as a DH. But Joe Girardi said he looks a lot better right now than he did a year ago, which he was still rehabbing every day in Clearwater. So the Phillies are going to plan for him to be obviously the starting left fielder, but I don't think he's going to play, you know, every day. I think you're going to need to spell him. And that's where either Adam Haseley or Quinn or Brad Miller can kind of slide over to play left field and provide coverage there. JT, I think, is going to be ready for opening day. It seems like, you know, everybody from the Phillies to JT to Joe Girardi is downplaying this. Was told it's really not a big deal. Obviously, it's a fractured thumb, but it's not the end of the world. And I would say he's on the roster right now. But if he's not, it's not going to be too much into April. And that's where you have to decide on if you want to add Jeff Mathis to the 40-man roster, or do you want to just roll the dice and you want to have Marchand play as your backup catcher to Andrew Knapp, where I don't know. I think that's kind of a tough spot. You know, Marchand obviously needs to develop in the minor leagues. He was rushed here last year just as an emergency, so they didn't have to add somebody to the 40-man roster. And I think it's a kid with a bright future that you have to, you know, let get that seasoning and really play some minor league games. And if minor league games are ready to be played at the start of the season, which they're supposed to be, I think that's where he belongs. And you just kind of see how long JT's out and see if you can crunch the numbers and get Mathis on the roster as a backup.
The over-under right now, you know, depends where you look, but is hovering right around the 81 to 82 game mark. The 500 mark is kind of where they've hovered basically the last couple of years. Last year, they were 28 and 32. I think Gabe Kapler's final year, they were exactly 500. A year before that, a game below 500. So basically in that same range, even if it's a shorter or longer season. We've mentioned the improvements they've made. The division has also gotten better around them. In your opinion, is that a fair marker? And which way are you leaning on that?
I think it's fair. I'm going to take the over just because I finished it. I think they finished with a winning record, but I'm not going to say, like, you know, 90 wins or, you know, not well over. It looks like 87 is what I think Fangraphs had the second wild card going to. And I think 87 would be a big jump, but 87's in play. I don't, so that would get you a playoff spot in a normal playoff scenario. So if that's the target number, I think the Phillies, you know, are in play for it. But the NL East, I can't pick you as the NL East champion when, you know, the Mets got a lot better. The Braves have won the last, three NL East titles. The Nationals won a World Series 2 years ago, and the Marlins made the playoffs and won a playoff series last year. So it's tough. It's tough to go to, as of right now. Again, like I say, it's easy to be optimistic right now, but you can't realistically look at the NL East and say the Phillies are the team to beat, or really even second place team, because you're going to have to finish second to make the playoffs, because unless barring, you know, catastrophic something, the Padres and the Dodgers are both going to make the playoffs. So now that's one wild card left for the Nationals, the Braves, the Marlins, the Phillies, or the Mets. So one of those teams is going to win the division. One of those teams is going to win the wild card. three of those teams aren't going to make the playoffs, and it's going to be tough. But there's a path to the postseason, but it's not easy.
More of the Locked On Phillies podcast coming right up, where I preview the upcoming Philadelphia Phillies season with Matt Breen of the Philadelphia Inquirer. But first, I wanted to tell you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Look, Built Bar has 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones: caramel brownie, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, and my personal favorite is the cookies and cream. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They are soft and easy to chew, but the best part about Built Bars is that they are healthy. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy or girl. They will help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and great for anyone looking to go on a diet. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. One last time, it's BuiltBar.com, the promo code LOCKEDON, and a 20% off your next order of Built Bars. I also want to tell you about my friends at rockauto.com. Look, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars, it's now impossible to stock all of the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts they happen to have on their own computer, choosing only the brands they happen to have in stock? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your own pocket. Chain storefronts have different price tiers for professional mechanics and the do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low. RockAuto.com also offers the lowest prices possible rather than charging prices based upon what the market will bear, just like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody, does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com, it's a family business serving hundreds of auto parts customers for more than 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com for shop and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Again, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Again, it's rockauto.com. And lastly, before we return to part two of my conversation with Matt Breen, look, February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a series called Locked On Presents More Than a Game. This week, we have two conversations for you to wrap up the month. First, a discussion on protests in sports across all leagues. Then tune in for the discussion on the importance of Black history within sports, what's been achieved, and the important work left to be done, all in a discussion on Locked On Presents podcast feed. You can subscribe on the radio.com app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Kind of the question that my first reaction when I heard the JT Realmuto signing, because, you know, everyone got excited about bringing him back, bringing Didi Gregorius back. And like, there was a lot of, you know, hype brought this offseason. Of course, Dave Dombrowski, new regime, and it seemed like they were all in on winning right now. But a lot of the moves, at least on the offensive side, were kind of just retaining the lineup that they had, which again was not the problem last year until the final week of the season, where kind of all the wheels just fell off. Is this team, as you look at it, not just this year, but kind of years into the future? They signed JT Realmuto to a 5-year deal. We know catchers tend to fall off around this point in their career. Is it, as you see it right now, if you had to make a prediction, are the Phillies a playoff team, or I'll even say a legitimate contender for the World Series during the duration of JT Realmuto's contract? They've obviously were rebuilding for years. I think it's well documented, a lot of draft picks and development of guys didn't go necessarily the way they wanted it to. Like, what is their timeline here relative to their competition? Because if not now, like, kind of when?
It seems like they're committed, you know, to the next three seasons, really. When you have Gregorius, you have Harper, JT, Wheeler, Nola, all under control for the next 3 years. So it's like, it really is like win now. And right, but we just got done talking about how difficult it is going to be to win now. So for that window to extend, you're going to need Bryson Stott to be a contributor. You're going to need some of these arms in the minor leagues to fill out that rotation. You're going to need somebody to step up and play everyday center field. And Andrew McCutchen, you know, isn't going to be here. So you're going to need somebody to, you know, that's two outfielders you need now. And it's going to be interesting to see, can they keep spending money? They did spend money this year, but can they keep throwing money at these holes next offseason? And a lot of that will depend, I'm sure, on what kind of you know, gate revenue they're able to have this year, which sounds like there might be some. So it's a great question. It's really going to be interesting at the end of this Bryce Harper contract to see what these 13 years were and, you know, what happened. Because who would have thought that, you know, when he signed it, that 3 years later, you'd have a new president, a new GM, a new manager. It's just, and know how different things are, but how different things could be 13 years or 10 years from now. But I don't know. I don't know if they're World Series contenders. I can't say that they are because there's so many better teams in baseball right now, but a lot, you know, 2 years from now, you could be looking at a totally different roster of, you know, it just matters if they hit on these draft picks. And right now it's so hard to know that because we didn't have the minor leagues last year. So it's tough to judge. Like Bryson Stott's played like what, a dozen professional games. And it's like impossible to say who he is because we've hardly seen him.
I'll get you out of here with two more questions that are kind of related to each other. The first one is on the field, Phillies fans should be looking forward to what the most this season, the improved bullpen. Is it a healthy Reese Hoskins? Is it the year two of Alec Boehm? Is it just, you know, the $330 million man, Bryce Harper going to the ballpark period? Like what's the number one selling point if you're the Phillies right now?
Well, no selling point, obviously is going to be Harper for the whole contract, but I think you brought up Alec Boehm and that's a guy I wanted to touch on anyway, that we really didn't talk about yet. And it was like, I think we take for granted when you look at how good he was last year, that how good he was skipping AAA, coming the season midway through, and not midway through, a couple weeks into it, into a 60-game season for a team that's competing for the playoffs, playing every day at third base, and just how difficult that is when it's a 60-game season. So there's no room for error. There's no room, like we talked about, the bullpen to work things out. It's just go. And it's, you put your head down and next thing you know, the season's over. Yet he made all these adjustments and it seemed like he was never a rookie. The more times he faced a starting pitcher, he actually got better. The more times he faced a team, he got better, which is like, you know, so the more that other teams knew about Alec Boehm, it didn't matter. He actually was able to figure it out and make adjustments. And I think he showed that, you know, he can handle being an everyday player in the big leagues. So now put that over a 162 of him in your lineup. That's the guy that I'm just really, you know, interested to see what do those numbers look like at the end of a full season? Because at the end of, you know, 80% of a 60-game season, they were pretty good. He probably should have been the rookie of the year. He wasn't. But I think that's the one, like, almost X factor and a guy that's almost forgotten about because there's so much focus on Harper and the starting rotation and all these other things. And Reese Hoskins is going to be healthy. Like, there's so much talk about that. But it's almost like, man, Alec Boehm was probably, I don't know, the best, second best hitter on the team last year. And he never played in AAA, you know, hardly played in the minor leagues at all. And he looked that good. So, you know, what's he going to look like for a full season?
I'd also argue the most clutch hitter on the team. Like, yeah, not always trying to
walk off
out. Walk-offs, trying to hit it, like never, not always just trying to hit it out, like we'll hit into the gaps. The Jason Wirth swing comparison is one that has been used a ton at this point, but it is kind of resemblance of the way he used to play, though he is an infielder. I'll sidebar really quick before I got to my final question, because you mentioned how amazing it was the season he had in the COVID-shortened season, all the things that worked against him, and he made the most of it, and like you said, was second in the Rookie of the Year voting. In terms of a guy like Scott Kingery, who, you know, there were a number of things that did not go his way and nothing on the field broke his way. Is that a guy that you would expect to take a step forward? Is he an everyday player? I know he's in the contention for the center field running, but Gene Segura is back. He's at second. Didi's back. He's at shortstop. I would think based upon the contract they have Scott Kingery on, this is his job. If he can claim it and return back to the potential they at least used to think that he had, that he would win it relatively easily over Haseley or Roman Quinn. Can he return to that type of player?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I would put him as out of those three, I would think he's the favorite, but it's really, this season's like, is he? I don't know, because this season for me is like going to be the defining season of who Scott Kingery is. Is he the kid we watched in the minor leagues, AA and AAA, and we're like, wow, this is Chase Utley? Or is he the guy that we've seen the last three seasons who struggles, looks out of place, and does not resemble at all that prospect that, you know, I watched so many times in Reading and Allentown? But you can't talk about his year last year without saying that he had COVID. He had and he didn't just have, you know, mild symptoms. He had a you know, full-blown bout of COVID, was really sick right before the start of summer camp, came into spring training 2.0, really underweight. Then he had back problems that flared up during the season, lower back problems. And if you know anything about coronavirus, that's a common symptom, is people, after they heal from it, they have a lower back pain. So and then he had, you know, shoulder and other injuries, but two coronavirus injuries related to lower back pain and then the fatigue. How are you going to play, you know, and be an everyday player after suffering that? So as bad as he was last year, I think you can almost, you know, excuse it. And now you say, show us what you are this year. And if Scott Kingery, you know, if he's what he was in 2018 and 2019, it's like, all right, you know, I think you know who Scott Kingery is. But if Scott Kingery can come into camp refreshed, he's fighting for a job, he has something to prove, you know, he can forget that he made all this money because he still has to earn a job, I think he can be a contributor. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what kind of camp he has. And then if he enters the season in center field, which if I was betting right now before a game's played in Florida, I would say he's the center fielder on April 1st.
That's kind of what I was alluding to. Like, I think overall his time in the majors has been disappointing relative to the potential we heard about down in the minor leagues. But last year especially was a struggle, and it was a COVID year and especially difficult for him. So I was just wondering, you know, what is the – I think you're right. The big question on everyone's mind is, can he not only return just to 2018, 2019 levels, ideally past that, but can he rebound from the season he had last year? Just because statistically wise, I mean, there's no other way to say it, was one of the worst starting player or just one of the worst hitters in all of Major League Baseball. The question, I was going to end it on kind of more of a personal note. As a media member, as a baseball fan, doesn't even have to be Phillies, just in general, we saw a lot of different rules in 2020. Some of them will be back in 2021. The thing in baseball you're looking forward to most this season, it could be that you get to, you know, spend more time at home covering the team. It could be no more DH. I don't know where you stand on that argument. It could be three batter minimum, runner on second base. Where do you kind of stand on all that stuff? And what do you like entering 2021, and what didn't you like in 2020?
I like the universal DH. I wish it would return. And I like the expanded playoffs. I wish that would return too. I just, you know, you look at all these other sports and, you know, eight NBA teams make the playoffs. I just think
now that, even more, like 10 in each conference.
Yeah.
Playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With COVID. And I just feel like the baseball playoffs, it's a great thing that it's so hard to get to, but I think it's time to open it up. That's when all your eyes are on your sport, is in the postseason. And if only, you know, four teams, you know, plus two wild cards are making it, I think you need to expand that. You need more teams to get in. You need to showcase Bryce Harper. You know, Bryce Harper should be in your postseason. You know, you need to have those more marquee players in the playoffs, and that just expand the playoffs. I don't think it waters down the product. It just, you know, gives people more chances to see the teams instead of seeing the same, you know, four or six teams every year. And then what I'm looking forward to, honestly, is fans in the stands. And not saying that, like, you know, day 100%, whatever's safe, obviously, you know, whatever, you know, the science tells us, but it seems like it's trending in the right direction. And it just from being in a ballpark, an empty ballpark, is incredibly different than, you know, a loud ballpark. And I think we took that for granted before last year when we're sitting in the press box and it's so quiet, you almost forget that what you're watching is a major league game because the stands are empty. No noise. It's almost like you're watching a practice or a spring training game. And I think you need that. The fans do bring a lot. They just make, you know, the feeling that this matters, that you know, people do care. People are paying attention. And it was just really jarring, especially at the beginning of last year when you're getting used to it. You know, a game starts 7:05 in the first pitch and you can hear it hit the mitt because there's nobody in the stands. So I'm looking forward to that, but more than anything else, I'm just looking forward to people in the stands, because that means we're getting back to a little bit of normalcy in the world.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, like when everything is theoretically back to quote unquote normal, if, you know, herd immunity ever, you know, actually is attained or most people are vaccinated and we're back to the way things were, like airline tickets are going to be through the roof because everyone's going to want to travel. Every single like the worst teams in sports are going to be selling out games because no one could do anything for this longest time. Like it's going to be almost weird going the other way that now like the Marlins might have more attendance than they ever had, although Florida didn't really shut down much of anything anyway. But like almost these people feel like they've been like let out of a cage. And I almost think like the atmospheres might actually get better as a result of this. I don't know if that's like a theory that you've thought about, or it's something I recently started thinking about, of like what it's actually going to look like on the other side. And it might be a while to get there.
Yeah. You go two ways. People can be afraid to go, or people, I guess
that will happen at first. And, yes.
Yeah. But I think I never thought of that, but I think you're right. I think it could be, especially if the Phillies are good and if they go off to a hot start and, you know, come June when, you know, more amounts of fans are let in per se, and Phillies are contending for a playoff spot. I think, you know, it would just be a hot ticket just because people, like you said, want to get out of their house.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Maybe it's not even this year. Maybe it's we're looking at opening day 2022 when we actually have full ballparks again and people aren't afraid. But yeah, when everyone's like let out of the cage, and obviously certain people and certain demographics are more comfortable doing certain things than others. So I get it's not a snap of the finger, so to speak. But eventually, like, I have this fantasy of like, an actual sold out Citizens Bank Park. And hopefully the team is good enough to go along with it. And we could actually, to go to your postseason point, maybe Major League Baseball chases money. And because they see people showing up, they expand the playoff. Let's get, you know, Mike Trout more than three career postseason games. Like how about that? You know,
that's a problem.
Yeah. That the best player in the sport. And part of that is how bad the Angels have been. Like you can't expand just to let them in, but it is kind of annoying. In. Yeah, just 30 team postseason. Just 30 team postseason tournament, just to make sure you get them in. 162 regular season games doesn't even mean a damn thing. Matt, I appreciate your time this evening. Again, best of luck covering the team. Of course, you can follow Matt his work at the Inquirer and follow what is your exact handle at Matt_Breen. Okay, Matt underscore Breen on Twitter, so you can follow his work there. Again, Matt, thank you so much for lending us some of your time this evening.
Anytime, Dan. Thanks a lot.
That'll do it for today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Again, a huge shout out to Matt Breen from the Philadelphia Inquirer for taking the time to come on the podcast today. I will be back with more episodes later this week and next week as spring training baseball on TV returns. We got games starting on Sunday, TV games here in Philadelphia on Monday. I'll be excited about it, and we'll be talking about it all right here on the Locked On Phillies podcast.